Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joining the studio today, very close together. Xhaka and Craig, we also welcome, not so close, thousands of miles away, in fact, Jan Åge Fjørtoft is with us from Norway as we just look to just tie a bow on Euro 2020 overall. Of course, I think everyone would agree, a brilliant tournament, despite, of course, the way in which it started in the incident with Christian Eriksen. But as a result, Denmark became pretty much everybody's second team in this competition, making it all the way through to the semi-finals before being beaten by England, of course, thanks to that controversial penalty. Meanwhile, big surprises, France getting knocked out, the drama of Spain against Croatia. But Italy, the best team going on and winning it all. Jan, overall, it's been a really good tournament, hasn't it?
It was a fantastic tournament. It was a great advert for football. It was great the way it built up somehow. I think we saw stars, we saw football stars, but what I would remember from this championship is also the way the collective thing, the team atmosphere, and how some teams, and the winner Italy especially, how they kept together. We saw Denmark did the same. And there was something about this championship. I got three kids. My oldest, he loves football. The two youngest, two daughters, they have never been into football, and they were following more or less every game with their friends. There was something about this championship. I'm not sure this tournament came out of the pandemic or whatever. It looks like everybody wanted to enjoy this. And I think that the players, the teams, the coaches, the fans in the stadium, they answered our call, so to say.
Yeah, there's something about this summer tournament that just seemed to resonate with so many people.
Yeah, I think it was when England lost in penalties.
Well, yeah,
to be quite honest with you, it became a really great tournament right at the end. There would have been a downside to that, but no, seriously, this was despite of UEFA, not because of UEFA. This was about the teams, but not about the travel and some of the stadiums being not even half full, and not just because of the COVID, but because of the travel and all that as well. But the teams put that to the side. We saw the French were awful. The Germans were as expected.
Yeah.
As Jan mentioned, for Denmark to come back from that and having lost the first two games was brilliant. Obviously, England was a story, and they were rock solid. But the big story was, obviously, the winners and how they played.
Yeah.
And how they played from match day one when they hammered the Turks. And they were awful, and then they just went on a roll from there.
There was something about having fans back in there.
This would have been horrible. This Copa America nonsense, but I didn't watch it, and that's upset people. But or some people, all right, one. And I got a tweet. How dare you not watch it? I don't watch it. I was watching the Euros. But how can you watch? It was tough to watch Premier League, Bundesliga, La Liga, and all these leagues during the year.
Yeah.
With no fans in. We got used to it a little bit. But if that had rolled into the Euros as well, that would have been a big switch.
It was a kind of sense of almost lethargy between us going into this tournament, because we were just watching football every day, and the empty stadiums and the leagues, most of them were concluded early, not much on the line. But this just kind of brought us back in love with it.
That's right. I mean, we've been through so much with the game, and the game has had to keep itself ticking over the last 12 or 18 months because of the COVID situation. But as we come to the end of it, we come to the Euros. And I thought it was a wonderful tournament, and having the fans back certainly added to that. It gave it a real feel. And while going into the tournament, pre-COVID, and as they announced the format for the Euros, I was sceptical about the 24 teams and whether it seemed easier to get through than to get knocked out.
Yeah.
Yet there was statistically it absolutely was. But even so, as the tournament played out, there was a sense of drama as you look at the groups unfold and who's finishing third and all that added to it. We'll see how that plays out in tournaments going forward. But for this one, for this year, given everything that the game has been through and we as fans have had to endure, it added to the drama, it added to the spectacle. And then the way the football played, the way I think international football has kind of taken on a more open attacking feel added to it as well. So it all came together perfectly, in my opinion.
I mentioned to you that when we were in here the other day that UEFA are supposedly exploring 32 teams.
Right.
I mean, maybe Trish tried to get Norway in for Jan. I don't know. I mean, I don't know, Jan. But even Scotland are getting to these tournaments now that they've been. But it's almost like, you know, where we saw the Italians and we saw, was it Chiellini as the captain lifting the trophy. It's almost like UEFA wanting to get every team up there on the final day and get them to lift the trophy. So this was... We got away with this one in terms of the quality with the 24 teams. I don't want to go... I really don't want to go to 32. Really don't want to go to 32. I think we pushed the barriers out here with what we had, with teams getting through on 3 points with one win, and likes of Ukraine getting through, who were awful, and then got absolutely pumped by England. So I think we have to be careful of that scenario.
To that point, probably the lowest ranked team that got into this tournament, North Macedonia. But they equipped themselves well. And maybe it's because of Goran Pandev. It took on a story of its own. So regardless of the lower quality, even North Macedonia gave us something to cheer about. To Craig's point, we go to 32. I'm not sure that we have stories to add, or at the very least personalities that add any kind of impetus to this.
You've been shopping again, haven't you? I can tell.
As Craig mentioned, best parts about the tournament was it the best team won. Italy, as you say, very much from the off. And, of course, they have been celebrating in some style over the last couple of days, deservedly so. One man picked Italy to win the tournament at the start.
Fair play to Jan, because he's the only person who's gone for another winner other than France. He's gone for Italy here to win the whole thing.
Jan, by the way, the only person who's not on the Italy bandwagon. From jump with Italy, he's got them winning in penalties after a 1-1 draw in regulation.
Well, Jan.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm happy. I'm happy, and I think the reason I'm happy that I beat all these guys in the studio who knows everything during this championship, sitting so long away from you, I'm not influenced by you guys, and that's great. But having said that, to be serious, the reason I chose Italy, I felt this: the English were resilient, that they can't lose. And there's something about Mancini, and it's easy now to say after winning the championship, there's something about the culture is getting to this Italian team. And I think what he managed to do now as well, and he did before the European Championship, not losing any game, is that he has made a culture in there that is a team. Yes, there are great stars like Chiellini, Bonucci, Donnarumma, when Jorginho in the middle, and Chiesa going forward and so on. But he still managed this to be about Italy. It's about they are as good on the pitch that they are singing the national anthem. The reason I'm saying that is something about that team. You want to be a part of that. You want to be out there. You can see it on their hearts. And I'm not saying all nations don't do that, but it's something about Italy. We are there for our country, the team, but foremost, we are there for the guy next to us. And for me, that is the greatest feeling you can have in a team, that you will die for the man next to you when you go out there on the field. And they had the hurdle of Spain, for example, but they came through, and they came through against England. Everything planned for England to win with Wembley, 55 years, so on, 1-0 down. What do Italy do? They keep calm. They just take the ball. There was a 20 minutes time that with England couldn't get the ball at Wembley, at their home turf. They didn't allow them one counterattack after the 1-0. It was just like unbelievable. And I'm very, very proud to see when I see teams going that way, believing in themselves, because this was not a copy. This was a culture they built. And just see the people around them. I mean, one of the memories I will have from this championship, there have been a lot, but I will have Viali, he's in tears on Mancini's shoulders. You know how much this meant to them. They were leaders of this team. So fantastic. And I think it's great. I was back in my parents' house. We were all supporting more or less England to win. I mean, that is the tradition. We follow England. But the way Italy did it through the tournament, the best team won. Yeah. And I think that is always a great feeling.
Of course, they got it done via penalties. We've discussed at length over the last couple of days Gareth Southgate's choices and decisions when it came to who took those crucial pens. Jan, you've been quite vocal on Twitter saying, a coach lives and dies by decisions. Southgate being good, making the right decisions this tournament, making pen subs. If they score, genius. Giving responsibility to a 19-year-old. If he scored, genius. No goals equals not genius. Of all people, Southgate knows all about that. England have England have practicing penalties for a long time. These five were the five best. Simple as that. Research shows the young players most likely to score. Southgate followed facts. So you think he did everything right, Jan?
No, I didn't. I'm just stating out what I think Gareth Southgate tried to do.
So what did he do wrong, in your opinion?
I think that it was wrong that he didn't take into context the pressure that was on these players going forward. I think we can discuss, and the boys will probably have our opinions on that. Was it right for Grealish to go out and say, I wanted to take the penalty? There was a big discussion in German media, of all medias, having this embarrassing tournament they had, discussing if Southgate knew the rule. We could have swapped around. He could have swapped around also during the penalty shootout. And that is the rule. To send a 19-year-old player forward, I think that is a wrong decision, although he followed the fact. When Harry Maguire went forward, I was thinking, wow, how can he do that? He must be a terrible penalty taker. And then he takes the best penalty in the history of tournaments. So
he smashes the camera.
His decisions are hard. Yeah, exactly.
I don't care what they say after the fact now. And this is a nonsense about, we decided on Friday and Saturday or whenever it was. We took penalties in training and we decided, here's what happens or what should happen. And I've already seen Jack Grealish have a little, and I'm not having to go at Jack Grealish, but I'm picking it out because he had a little pop back. I think it's something a UK pundit says about experienced players.
Yeah.
And, but I look at Grealish, Shaw, Stones, Sterling, all had great seasons, pretty much. They're all talisman, they're all big players. Big, big domestic and international players, all four of them. If I'm them, I'm saying to the manager, if I'm those players, I'm saying to the manager, and if I'm playing, listen, if it gets to the nitty-gritty and I'm still on the field, I need to be one of those guys that's taking the responsibility, not the teenagers, right? That's what I need to be telling them. Forget this. We've figured it out. I can't rest for myself in allowing these players to go up. So as a 25, 26, 27-year-old player worth millions, I'm the guy that's going to go up. Let's leave the kids to the side. And the other scenario is, you judge penalties by how someone's playing.
Right.
If, just give you the scenario. If you're playing in a big match and it goes to penalties and it's extra time and you're one of the penalty takers and your team's losing, your team's winning 3-1 and you make two mistakes, and you have a bad 20 minutes, right? You're not stepping up to take a penalty because you're not in a very good moment. And young Saka came on, and he wasn't terrible, but as I said, he looked like the occasion had got him. And the other two were lucky to get on the field, because only because Italy kicked the ball out that they actually got on the field. That's how negative Southgate was. I've said that to you. Put Sancho on at half-time and extra time to try and win the game.
Right.
Don't put him on with a minute or two to go just to take penalty. Put him on to try and win the game, and if you don't, then he takes a penalty. But to suggest everything was figured out the day before, when you don't know the scenario of the match and the mindset of the player, is he injured, is he fatigued, is he having a good game, is he a bad game, then you have to figure it out from there.
Michael Owen tweeted out today defending Southgate and his decision to have the youngsters taking the penalty by listing all those who had missed penalties in the past for England, likes of Beckham, likes of Ince, people like that, who were more experienced than others.
Then the responsibility falls on the experienced shoulders to take the heat, rather than falls on the... Because everybody can miss a penalty. We've seen Messi miss penalties galore. Right. But then let that pressure... And let that weight of the expectation of the whole country, there was over 30 million watching. Mm-hmm. It was one of the highest ever audiences in the UK. Let the experienced players take that pressure, not the kids.
Dan, can I say something? I think that is a valid point, because when we are doing these analyses after the penalty kick-off, there is something that is missing somewhere. And I agree to a certain thing with Craig here. I think this is the weakness of Gareth Southgate. Gareth Southgate has done a fantastic job as a national coach. The results, based on the history, been absolutely fantastic. But they were leading 1-0 in the final. They couldn't do anything. I think that his how he's used his whole squad has been bad. He has been the brought in players from the bench has not been been good at all. And I think that that is the weakness of his leadership. And I started with giving him a compliment for his leadership, but that is his weakness. You can't do that. He will do, okay, these are my five best, and that's what I try to do. You put forward a 19-year-old. That is fantastic. He gives responsibility to a 19-year-old, and he produces. But I think that is where we show that a weakness of a Gareth Southgate. Was it Van Gaal who took off the goalkeeper and put on a second goalkeeper during a penalty shootout? Of course he should do that. Nobody does. But Van Gaal will do that. So I think that we are now touching a bit of the weaknesses of Gareth Southgate's leadership. And that has to be said as well, although it took them to the first final for 55 years.
Shaka Hislop.
Look, there's a very thin margin between success and failure, and this penalty shootout kind of showed that. We also have to remember back in 2018, where the old cliche was penalty shootouts were football's version of Russian roulette, and Gareth Southgate addressed that. He pays very close attention to penalty shootouts. He feels a part of the game. They prepare. So given his experience and given what he said about penalty shootouts, I don't judge him on the five takers that he's picked. But in the same way that we were having a discussion around Alvaro Morata with Spain, you just feel that those high-pressured kicks are the ones that you prefer to have your more experienced takers take. Mm. The catch-22 to that is you may find yourself in a position that Portugal did in 2012 against Spain. Ronaldo carded to go fifth, and they lose before that. And then the question becomes, well, why wasn't Ronaldo taking earlier? You have to live and die as a coach by those decisions. I firmly believe you don't want to have Sako going fifth. Mm-hmm. If you want Kane as your first taker, that's one you have to defend. But I prefer to have my better, my more experienced takers go later on. If it doesn't get to five, then it's just one of those things that you have to accept. But having somebody like Sako who doesn't take penalty kicks for club or country with the fifth kick, having to go up against a goalkeeper like Gigi Donnarumma, who's, during the course of this tournament, established himself as one of the best in the world.
It's a huge presence.
It's looking at those kicks, and this is just me sitting on my sofa at home, and you see Donnarumma in between those sticks. Yeah. He looks huge.
Yes.
As a 19-year-old, in the highest pressure situation that country has been in 55 years, I cannot imagine how small those goals looked to a player as talented as Saka. And so it doesn't come as any surprise to me that it was a poor kick and that Donnarumma made the save. But it goes to the point that we've been making throughout. The order of kicks, the pressure on takers, whether you're having a good game or a good tournament, where you fit in that five, I think is something that Gareth Southgate has to decide on the day. I have no problem with him deciding on his five 24, 48 hours before. But on the day, that's when you make the decision on the order of the five.
Yeah, you make the decision in the order, but I still think you make the decision and you make changes based on how players played and how they're feeling. Listen, when a manager approaches, when a scenario like that, nobody wants to take a penalty.
Right.
But anybody says to you, I'm desperate to take it, they're lying to you.
Yeah.
Somebody has to take it. Mm-hmm. Somebody has to take it. That's when it has to be the experienced player that says, listen, nobody wants this pressure.
Right.
Nobody wants to be the Gareth Southgate or the Chris Waddle or the Stuart Pearce of yesteryear. But those were super experienced players that stood up, missed, but took the responsibility. Think about David Beckham in 98. This wasn't penalties and this was his own doing. The stupid little flick out to Diego Simeone, the sending off, and the backlash that David Beckham faced, right? He faced it 24 hours later, he faced it 12 months later. At every Premier League ground he went to, right or wrong, and I'm not condoning that, it was terrible, but that's what happened. We've already seen the abuse on social media. The pressure will come on these players as well when they pitch up at domestic grounds. And so you're not just adding the pressure of that moment, you're adding the pressure of a long career for 19-year-old players to take that responsibility. And that's why when I look these other players saying, well, the players were picked beforehand, go to Southgate and say, I'm taking one if I'm on the field because I'm one of the leading guys, not a 19-year-old, but they bottled it.
Let me also say, I have a real issue with Grealish coming out and answering pundits in the way that he did. Listen, I love Grealish. I think he's an incredible talent. And, okay, if he put himself forward to step up and take a penalty, so be it. But we've praised Gareth Southgate in how he's built a unit around this team, around a number of issues that go far, much further than football. We've also spoken in depth about Mancini, the job he's done, and how he's made this Italy team a team.
Yeah.
That is not about individuals, it's about the team. And I know I'm speaking hypothetically, and there's no way to verify this, but had Italy lost, I cannot imagine anyone in that Italian dressing room coming out and saying, I put myself forward, but Mancini didn't choose me. I think that goes against a team ethic that's...
But doesn't he have the right to defend himself? He's got Roy Keane saying Jack Grealish bottled it.
Why does he need to defend himself? Why does he need to come out and effectively throw Gareth Southgate and other players under the bus in defending himself against someone sitting in a studio not too dissimilar from this one?
But they're saying something false about him.
But his focus is with the team and that dressing room. That is his only focus as a player, in my opinion. I don't think he needs to.
Yeah.
But first, it needs to be said that the team, the unit of England has been excellent. I mean, I've never seen an England team being so much of a unit. Having said that, I agree with you that Grealish maybe was not necessary. And I felt after the game, maybe Gareth Solskjaer should have said that I had 3, 4, 5 other players who also wanted to shoot, but these were my picks. He could have said that. He didn't. And that what Grealish did to go out. And I agree with you. Isolated when he went out and kind of answered Roy Keane what he did. When he went out and did that, he undermined the gaffer. But the gaffer maybe should have said that. Having said that, I think that still, with the legacy of this England team, they're very unit. Maybe, and I'm just saying maybe, if we have a look at it and if we isolate the final, maybe there were too much of a unit down there. There was no one standing out on the day. You just kind of feel that. And if Italy, when they were back, you just saw players growing up. They were like Chiellini going, Bonucci, come on, Chiesa going on for fun, keeping the ball for fun. Maybe that is what England is missing. Maybe that is what they're lacking in their game, because they are good kids. Maybe they knew that rebel kind of thing. And I think that, coming back to my other answer, maybe he had those players on the pitch and maybe he should have spiced the team up with doing more like that. I mean, to be a unit, that is not the goal. To be a unit is a consequence of the goals you want to reach as a manager. And maybe sometimes England are too comfortable, too kind, too good kids. You kind of miss the old times when you have the gas ass or the Gary Lineker scoring the goals for fun out of nowhere, or Peter Beardsley. No, I'm getting very old. Like, I listen to myself. So I go back to you guys.
Do you know, penalties aside, England were just okay for me.
Throughout?
You know, everybody's talking about them. Yeah. And they're final, exciting for the fans, and maybe got over the line first in 50 odd years. I understand all that. Second tournament in a row, they've been, you know, getting very excited. World Cup 2018, pretty easy pathway, just okay for me. England in this competition, nothing better than just okay. People talk about the win against Germany, wasn't a great game. Ukraine were cannon fodder. And when they did finally meet a really good side, they got beat and they got outplayed. And I don't say that to take away from the achievement of getting to the final. I say it because I look at the squad they have and the players at his disposal, and I want to be more excited. I was quite excited watching Italy every time I saw them play. They were good defensively, they were good on the counter, they were good at pressing sometimes, they were good at ball retention. It was quite an exciting side to watch, and there was goals in that Italian side. There was goals in this England side. There was more goals than we saw in this England side. Mm. And they didn't get the juices flowing for me as I think they should have done, even though they did get to a final. I think there was more to come from this England side. Mm. And I think in some sense, Southgate has done, as Jan said and everybody has said, he has done a good job at harmonising and building a good PR machine and building a good unity. But I do feel there is more to come from this England side, and until they get that extra 10 or 20% out of it, they might not get over the line, when in fact they might not get a better chance with the players they've got.
I just wonder if we're seeing a changing in the way that international football is played. I've said ever since I've been here that international football and club football are two completely different games. Club football is far more open, far more attack-minded. International football is about being solid, secure, taking the few chances, or taking one of the few chances when they come. And I think that's what you saw from England. Throughout this tournament, England had the same approach to every single game. Started really well and then just settled into a couple of defensive blocks and hoped to take a couple of chances. That's what you saw in the final. Started really well for the first time they got a goal that early, but then you see them sitting in that defensive block. What you saw from Italy, and which is why I'm wondering if you're starting to see a changing of the way international football is played, Italy attacked. And who thought we'd be sitting after an international tournament talking about the Italian being the most attack-minded of the teams in the tournament? Italy always had a plan on how to hurt you, as opposed to we soak up pressure and ask for something special from somebody else. I just wonder if, again, this signals a kind of changing of how the game is played because of the success it brought to one of the teams that you never thought you'd be seeing that about. And to Craig's point, as far as an attacking team goes, I don't think anybody was better equipped than England, yet look how that tournament played out.
But I think that is the development of football is quite interesting to see, because we are all talking about the great teams that we've seen, but they're great teams getting individual players out. We talk about Denmark, but go into Denmark, Mahler, for example, we didn't know a lot about him. He had a fantastic tournament. So out of the team, you have to develop the players to be individuals. You get individuals to glue them into a team, and then the team explore the individuals. And I think that is the great thing about Italy. They have this defense of Bonucci and Chiellini. I mean, if you're a small country, you just hire these two. I mean, what a defense. They are fantastic. With Donnarumma, there is something about them, and you need that. I see my small country, Norway. We have an Erling Haaland. We have a Martin Ødegaard in Real Madrid. But we don't have anybody who can defend. Even Austria, they got Hinteregger from Eintracht Frankfurt. He will go through the wall for you. That is the defender. But to have a team is to create a stage where the individual can go out. And if you see Chiesa, let's use him as an example. I mean, what a fantastic tournament he had. Why did he have a fantastic tournament? A, he's a great player. But B, he had a base of his team, of his passion. And I think that Mancini said it well. We want the ball, we want the space, and we want to go forward. That is how simple it can be said to be a leader of a football team.
And we forget also that... You know, if you look at the two coaches in the final, you know, this gets buried a lot. That, you know, Mancini's got a resume that is more than half decent.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
yeah,
what he did what he did at Man City and some other places. I mean, okay, that 2012, I think it was, whatever game when Aguero scored, they almost blew it, but he was the man that got them over the line. Mm-hmm. You know, so we kind of forget that. And the difference is Gareth sort of fell into it off the back of the debacle with Sam Allardyce. Mm. Yes, he has some managerial experience, but he doesn't have that resume. Nope. And we saw that in the game, Ian, to an extent, because, you know, Immobile wasn't getting any service. And Immobile, Ciro Immobile is a penalty box striker, and he realised into the second half that This kind of play wasn't working. He needed somebody that was a little bit more mobile and a little bit more movement. And, he made those changes. Where Gareth Southgate was making changes to sort of, what, try and drive this game to extra time and penalties. He wasn't making changes to win the game. He was making changes to stop them losing. That was the difference.
As critical as we are of Gareth Southgate, let's remember some of the England managers in the past. From Terry Venables to Sir Bobby Robson, Capello, and Gareth Southgate has now gotten to a World Cup semi-final and England's first final in 55 years. So while we're critical, let's just keep those successes in mind as far as Gareth Southgate goes.
But maybe they didn't.
Yeah, but we're not discussing Dan.
I'm just saying.
I'm not critical of Gareth Southgate. We are critical on what you needed to do to come over the line to win a final. That is fantastic what he's done with England, and maybe that's the manager you needed to at least get him further. I mean, there is no cliches more now. It's down to the thing that England got to be a tournament team. This and that we have to do. But I think when you get to the final, you have to be critical. How did you do that? I'm not 100% agree with Craig saying that they were a bit lucky or they were okay. They were in the final. So the path, whatever, what kind of side of the racket you are. I mean, West Germany, Germany have had that luck over the years as well. England have now been in a semi-final and a final in a big tournament. Fair to him. But to take this great England team to the next and win a trophy, that is the next thing. Remember back in the days when that golden generation of Schweinsteiger, Müller, Lahm and Neuer couldn't win anything for Germany. What do you do to take them to the next step? Okay, winning the Champions League and winning the World Cup. And that is the criticism we're talking about now. But Gareth Southgate, how to take them now to the next step to win it. But boys, we have to be honest. In the final, yes, they were 1-0 up. But they went close in the playing time. Penalties, that is a lottery. But they went close to kind of get that decisive 2-0. It was all Italy who were going to win the game. And Craig said it well. He did things not to lose and not to win it.
A lot more on the final. Stuart Robson joins Gav and Jules. And I'll tell you what, Robbo pulls no punches in his criticism of Gareth Southgate and his tactics.
Well, he got a word then.
He did. Robbo was angry. Check that out over on the website. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Just a reminder to keep up to date with all the latest transfer news. Be sure to check out Transfer Talk over on our website. When you think of Yanago Fjortoff, you think of Jadon Sancho. Now he's made that move to Manchester United. You have a new toy to play with. Erling Haaland, Jan, suggestions that Abramovich really wants your fellow countryman and is willing to pay a lot of money for him.
Tough days, Dan, for me now. Jadon Sancho gone. What shall I do? I have to let him go. I'm doing a medical now, and he's soon been a Manchester United shirt. So then I need another one. But what we do know, I went to the Champions League final, one of the few games I could travel to this season. And in and around Chelsea was all talking about Erling Haaland. That was before the game. And it's not a surprise that they want Erling Haaland, because I think the most clubs want him. What he has done the last couple of seasons is unbelievable. And I mean, there is an understanding that the only one who could do that is Chelsea. That was the first thing I heard at the Champions League final. Now, the last two or three days, there have been reports coming out and people saying that they want to test Dortmund. Remember, Dortmund is saying exactly the same thing that they did when Sancho last summer was linked to Manchester United. I said all along he wouldn't leave Dortmund, that they will keep to his word. But we have to remember back in those days, if Manchester United put 120 million euro on the table for Sancho, they would have let him go last summer. So now they're talking about 175 million euro to test Dortmund. How much will they keep him? Remember, next season, there is a clause saying he can leave the club for like 80, 85 million euros. So this is simple math. Yeah. Having said that, Dan, it's about Dortmund, you never know. They Dembele and Aubameyang, they kind of knocked themselves out of the club. Robert Lewandowski went for for free. He went for free to Manchester, Bayern Munich at that time. But again, Dortmund very, very clear so far. There is no chance we will let him go. And it was funny when Sork came to the camp. Erling Haaland was not in training and he was joking. Well, he's in England. And I think that's the point where Dortmund are at the moment. And we'll see. Will there be a big, big offer on the table to kind of test Dortmund's resilience to Chelsea and keep the player Erling Haaland? But there have been reports saying that Team Haaland has agreed personal term with Chelsea. That is wrong. That is not correct.
What is Haaland?
One second. This is not just about the big fee for Dortmund, because the big fee is just not for Dortmund. There's been very clever people been involved in this lad's dealings.
Right.
So, yes, Dortmund might get a slice of the money over 75 million, but there's two or three people that are going to get very rich off the back of this deal.
Mr. Ryan.
You're making that sound like Leanne is getting a cut.
I think, you know, and I'm not speculating, but there's at least...
I'm not speculating, but I'm going to.
Well, his agent and his father and maybe some other management people are going to get a big cut off the back of the fee that's in the contract. How much Dortmund get, I don't know. But Dortmund are not going to get everything that goes over the clause fee. That's going to be split among some very lucky people off the back of this young lad.
Yeah, but that is an argument against that he will leave now. Because if Dortmund now let him go, there is not the same math that it will be next summer. Because next summer, there is a fixed fee. So this summer, the only one who will decide where he's going to play is Dortmund. You know, but I just wanted to say that, because it seems that if Chelsea agree with Dortmund, Team Haaland will say straight away that we'll go to Chelsea. What we have learned from Team Haaland all along, they have made good decision. He could have gone to Juventus. He went to Salzburg because it was the right place to go. He could have gone to Manchester United and other clubs in England, and he chose to go to Dortmund because it was good for his development. So, yes, there could be some rich people coming along. There could be a rich player, of course. I think he got a good salary at the moment as well. But so far, Craig, they've been doing wisely in the advice to the player.
How good would this be? I mean, you talk about the bridging that gap between themselves and this season. It was Man City last season. Yeah. Sorry, and the season before it was Liverpool. And for all Chelsea's good play under Tuchel in particular, and under Frank Lampard, to be fair, the one area they lacked clearly was somebody just bashing it in the back. Yeah. I'm making that sound simple. Like, you can just, anybody can bash it in the back of the net. But for all their possession and all the chances they created, they were a little wasteful.
Yes.
He's already shown he doesn't do wasteful. He just does get the job done. This would be brilliant.
What did Team Burnley look like back in the day?
One man and a dog. Slice the pedigree, chum. Off you go, son.
Meanwhile, of course...
It's changed a bit.
A transfer that we know that it's almost inevitably going to be done is Donnarumma to PSG. Mm. Of course, player of the tournament from the Euro, Shank. There's no way he's going to be sitting on the bench, is there, behind Keylor Navas?
I really wouldn't think so, given Donnarumma, who he is, who he's gone on to establish himself further as during the course of the Euros. But at the same time, you have Keylor Navas, who, as I've said time and time again, for my money, is one of the best goalkeepers in the world, has proven his worth to PSG. How do you make this work? How do you balance this? And I really don't have an answer to that. If I'm Team Donnarumma, I don't accept sitting on the bench. If I'm right. Keylor Navas, again, you've done more than enough to continue.
It happened at Real Madrid with him, didn't it? Courtois comes in, he's out. And
But then for Navas, it was a little bit different. He comes to Real Madrid, has to sit on the bench for a year. For Iker Casillas, understandably, buys his time. Wins three Champions Leagues. And despite having speculation thrown at his doorstep throughout, all of a sudden Courtois arrives, he has to go. He finds himself at PSG doing wonders for them yet again, and now faced with the same kind of situation.
Well, I think the scenario was that they were pretty happy with Keylor Navas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you should be. He's a fantastic goalkeeper. But because of the availability of Donnarumma, then you just take him in. But listen, there's only one man going to play.
Yep.
That's Donnarumma. So the other side of the coin is, you know, this adds more problems to a squad balance.
Right.
We've already seen this team where, you know, they've got, at one point they had too many superstars and try to fit them all in. And now you're going to have a situation where one of these, well, it's going to be Keylor Navas, it's going to be a very unhappy chappy. That doesn't make for a good camp. Let's see how they sort that out. But terrific signing, Donnarumma. I'm not quite sure why he wants to go and play in France, if I'm being quite honest with you.
Well, no one else offered him a contract. That was the kind of thing.
The money?
Yep.
Just the money. Well, if it comes down to just the money, then fine. But I think there are better places he could have landed.
Jan?
Yeah, I agree with Craig. There's only one who will play. But I think that is just show the business of football. If there is a Donnarumma available in the market, you have to take him. And it is also a difficult... Like in Bayern Munich, they have a Manuel Neuer. They try to get a Nübel in. How long can you keep him? How long can you keep him on the bench? Now they're sending him to Monaco. But Donnarumma in there, I mean, you have, if you have the chance to take him, you have to go for him. And talking about Team Donnarumma and Team Haaland, they got one guy in common, that's Raiola. He's a good businessman as well, although being a good advisor for his player. But this is a wonderful signing for PSG. And I think so far, this transfer window, I mean, PSG has been excellent, need to be said.
No surprises then. Donnarumma is in the team of the tournament. This was picked by UEFA delegates. Taking a look at this. I can't read any of that. There it is.
There's
Donnarumma on there. Yeah, I can see Donnarumma.
Definitely on there.
Walker, Maguire, Bonucci, Spinazzola.
Somebody's built this big wall behind us and we'll never use it. It's a waste of money.
Lukaku, Chiesa, Sterling, Pedri, Jorginho.
No problem with Spinazzola. Surprised it's Maguire was good, but Bonucci and Chiellini were there. And listen, this just shows you what some of these idiots are like. Who are the UEFA delegates, UEFA technical people, UEFA idiots.
Right.
Like Patrick Schick scored 5 goals in the tournament and arguably scored the goal of the tournament against Scotland. Only one other countryman from Czech Republic has done that, Milan Baroš. And yet he's not in because he doesn't play for one of the big boys.
Right.
Fantastic tournament he had, better than Lukaku.
It's UEFA technical observers.
Yeah, the one he observed himself in the mirror.
Luke Shaw.
Jan?
I want him in. Yeah, I want Luke Shaw in. And I don't think you should split Chiellini and Bonucci. There is no chance. They have to be in there. Maguire, a great tournament. And a man we talked a lot about when we are on air, boys. Paul Pogba had a great tournament as well. But France knocked out early. So I think it's fair to put these in. Pedri, a fantastic tournament. Jorginho, good as well. So what Craig Burley calls the UEFA idiots, they were not bad, were they, Craig? We have to be generous.
Oh, shut up, Jan. Patrick Schick carried the Czech Republic.
Cristiano Ronaldo.
We scored penalties.
Top scorer of it.
Patrick Schick and an unfancied team, bashing goals in for fun, goal of the tournament from the halfway line, batters
it
the
Dutch. It was against Scotland.
Idiots, you can go and be a UEFA technical observer. You fit right in.
Shaka.
Yeah?
Go on, Shaq. Help me out.
I'd like to remain completely neutral.
Wow.
Please here, Dan. Leave this between Craig and Jan.
Patrick Schick.
Schick or Lukaku?
Schick or Lukaku?
Schick.
Schick.
Because Craig's a lot closer
there
than Jan is.
This is Ian Dart was given the task of picking the flops of 11. Gnabry didn't play well. And Mbappe. You could have had Leroy Sané in there as well, surely. I think you could have squeezed him
Bruno
in.
Bruno Fernandes play? Was Bruno Fernandes
Yeah, Bruno Fernandes, nothing.
Well, Ben Chilwell didn't play.
No.
So it's not his fault.
No.
And Marek
few Germans.
Yeah, Marek
Hamrick. Few Germans.
I feel a bit... I mean, it's not easy for Ian. I'm sure he put a lot of time into this, about 30 seconds. Marek Hamzik is well over the peak of his career. He's in his mid-30s. He's carried Slovakia for years, so,
Jan?
Not having that.
Yeah, I think with Pavard is a good one. I think sometimes Pavard did a fantastic goal at the World Cup, and we all remember that. Mm. But I think also when you've seen Bayern Munich, has, defensively, has been a bit weak point for them. I never bought into Pavard, but he has an unbelievable record. But I think he's rightly so being in that team. I would like to have more German players there, because I think what Germany did in this Euros was, I won't use the word scandalous, but you expect more from a football nation as big as Germany.
Ian picked his team of the tournament as well. You can check that out over on the website, plus his justification.
Check it out on the website.
You have to check it out on the website.
Go to the website, check it out. There it is. Look, you can watch yourself as well.
Where is it? I don't want to see myself. I hate that jacket.
You bought it.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Next month sees the first of 8 seasons kick off on ESPN Plus. Every single match available live for you. Alaves, Real Madrid, Barca against Real Sociedad, Celta Vigo, meanwhile, taking on the defending champions. And we still, of course, have the Bundesliga as well. That kicks off August 13th. Borussia Mönchengladbach taking on the defending champions, Bayern Munich. All those games also available on ESPN Plus. Also on Plus, Football Americas, be sure to join the boys for the latest edition, which is available now. And if you haven't checked it out yet, be sure to watch Abby's Place, that streaming exclusively on ESPN Plus as well. Well, that's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. We will be back.
There's only 3 of us. 4.
What do you mean?
4 of us on it.
Yeah? So what did that?
I thought the way you were talking, it was like 10.
No, I just said thanks to everyone who's been on. You too,
well,
and yeah.
You're welcome.
Ah, good. We'll be back for more, though. Stay tuned. Extra Time is next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. The desk is back. The chairs have been burnt.
First time since pandemic started.
There's 3 of us at the desk, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I was on my own for a long time, then it was 2 of us.
That was what, April? April last year?
March.
March.
Yeah, March.
You're on your own, best place for you.
Well, yeah, it's in my basement, that works out. Oh, yeah. With Josh.
Shut up, Josh! Stop the dog barking. Yeah, that wasn't ideal, but shut up. It was what it was.
Jan is with us as well. Jan, I feel we've got a wider shot than normal. What's the newspaper article next to David Beckham?
Oh, that is actually about my son. This is his room. I've borrowed that through all the pandemic. And as you guys can sit together, I will still be in my son's room. And there's just an article about him going another way, going to make his... education in America, in Duke University.
And he's gone to Air now, is that right?
He's at Air, it's the same club where Stephen Nichols started his career. Wow. Unbelievable.
And he's going to meet a nice girl from Air.
Oh,
probably.
Kansas.
He's not married, is he?
No, not yet.
Oh, he's going to meet a nice Scottish woman.
Right, I've got to move on because I have no idea where this is going.
I was quite excited.
Neither am I.
Well, it's a well-renowned place here for... Shut up.
Craig. No. Craig, tell us about your experience in here.
Moving on. You don't want to know. Shaka, has the needle moved for Messi to become the GOAT according to you?
Oh, yeah, I was thinking about this.
One where? Pelé, Maradona never won the Copa America.
Yeah.
So you were thinking about this?
I was. When Messi won the tournament, I never watched. In front of no fans. No one
cares. That's the thing come to your mind.
Yeah, I thought Shaq's he's screwed now, Shaq, and he's going to have to finally eat that humble pie.
Oh, I have no problem eating humble pie. The needle has moved to the question.
How far has it moved?
It's ticked up. That's all I'm going to say. It's ticked up a little bit like that.
Wow.
Yep.
Moved enough for you to get a haircut and dressed up.
The media, especially the English, have gone into a Chiellini and Bonucci loving Jan since the final. They were good, but England were awful offensively. They're no Nesta Cannavaro, not good enough to tie the laces of Maldini Baresi.
Oh, okay.
Dear Mr. Joyfulness, whatever team you support, you will love to have the two of them. They're absolutely brilliant. Not only defending, they are great defenders blocking, but they're also the atmosphere they create in the team, the confidence they give in the team. Remember back when Chiellini did Alba at the semi-final, I think it was. Mm-hmm. It was just like unbelievable. I would love to have those kind of players in my team. And if you see, sometimes the big teams over the years, they've always had a Ramos, Real Madrid, or a Puyol at Barcelona. So these players are so necessary to win tournaments. Yes, Harry Maguire had a good tournament, but it's not, in my opinion, if you see over the years, not enough to be up there with Chiellini, Bonucci yet.
I'm not sure.
You can't win, can you?
No, you can't.
Chiellini has been one of the best defenders of his generation. You can talk about Maldini and all these others, but you can only do what you do at the time you're playing. He's been an out and out class defender with all the dark arts. He knows every trick in the book to get the job done.
Including
very good decision making for defending. That should be my Twitter name, by the way.
What's that?
Joyfulness.
Mr. Joyfulness.
Yeah, that's correct. What you think. You think
now that England lost, Jan,
it's much more joyful.
Yes,
I thought it was you, Craig. I thought it was you. Joyfulness.
That's joyfulness. That's me. It's my Burner account.
Meanwhile, I'm not sure how much.
What would you have been like if England had won? Because you were sat there in full punter mode. Corner kick. Yeah, he was like, Shaka. Every time they got a corner, the chair got closer. Come on!
I've seen him watching England.
I don't think that's nothing to be ashamed of.
You should be ashamed of it?
I felt there was
straight away.
Tone.
Little man syndrome. You're on the back foot straight away.
But there was a mocking tone to it being brought up.
I just brought it up. You now measure my tone of voice.
Yeah, well, I've worked with you for however long.
Jan?
There's nothing wrong by supporting your country, Craig.
Yeah.
I mean, you haven't had this feeling since Mel Gibson won in Braveheart, so shut up.
Shut up.
Well, I have to say, Mel Gibson didn't win in the end, but there you go.
Spoiler alert.
He lost some penalties.
God, have you watched Braveheart? I shouldn't have said that.
Oh, God.
When he shouts freedom, he's actually alive.
Right. Is that based in air?
Is that based in air? Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Tell us about air again, Greg.
There's this bar down here, down by the harbour.
Right. I'm not sure how much you followed this story. The Spanish media have been going crazy about it. A leaked tape where Florentino Perez, back in the day, was calling Raul and Iker Casillas frauds. What do you make of it, Jan? Do you guys think too much is being read into the whole Perez recording leak without context? Lots of things can sound wrong. Nobody knows what had happened at the time or background behind those comments.
Well, it's interesting now after so many years it's come out, but I think there is a lot of clubs where they're very afraid of the big stars because that kind of undermined their position at the club. These are two club legends. Having said that, we don't know what they have done to him. But for the fans, it will always be the winners will be those players. But there are some club, they understand the history of a club, they understand the culture. I think that's what Jurgen Klopp has been so good at Liverpool, know their history. As Ole Gunnar, of course, but he is a former player himself, so he's not that impressive. But Jurgen Klopp coming in there, Kenny Dalglish took a session, they've all have the players around. But by Real Madrid, you've got a feeling that the biggest stars at the club should always be the leaders. And I think that you have to see in that we shouldn't make a lot out of it. There is always reasons because of these leaks so many years later.
Let me ask you, hold on.
Oh.
What's the context that makes this okay? Everybody's saying it's taken out of context. What is the context that makes what Florentino Perez say there? Okay.
We don't know Xhaka. We don't know Xhaka.
I know we don't know the context.
You ask.
I'm asking what context makes it okay. Just give me a hypothetical.
Yeah, it could be the hypothetical that I've had an argument at the club, maybe a role of Raul or Casillas. Remember back in the day, that could be something. But I'm saying I'm not defending him, Perez, doing that. I'm just saying that we don't know the context. What did he answer at? What was the quarrel about? Was there a quarrel at all?
Well,
we don't know that.
He just resigned as president.
That's exactly my thing. Listen, I understand the point you're making, Jan, that we don't know the context. We don't know what question was asked. And I am just putting it out there. What is the context? What question could be asked that makes it okay to call the two players who have the most and second most appearances for Real Madrid, calling them the biggest two frauds in the club that the club has ever seen? What possible question makes that
lack of confidence
answer palatable?
Lack of confidence, Xhaka. And that's what I tried to do. That was my main point, that people like these, leaders of a club, they have a lack of confidence and they try to turn it around. This is the Napoleon syndrome or whatever. Oh. Call it whatever you want. There's lack of confidence.
I think, I don't follow this story, but you get the feeling that these people say these things when they feel that they've not gotten enough from these individuals.
I get that.
And that's affected them.
I get that. He feels threatened by these two players, you know, whatever it may be, but the thing for me is he comes out and says, well, that those statements were taken out of context. What's the context?
Right.
This is a man, the
context is only that you feel threatened by two players.
This is a man when the Super League was going up in flames so high you couldn't see the top of them. We're still carrying on and talking about how they were going to build it. I'm no interest.
Did Xhaka prefer to take a pen or be in goal during a penalty shootout?
Oh, being goal. Yeah, you're under no pressure when you're in goal.
No one expects you to do anything, isn't it?
Tell you what, it's even easier. You don't take this into consideration as well. It's even easier to take a penalty. It should be. Easier now.
Because they've got to stay on the line.
Because that one foot has to stay on the line. Because they were all narrowing.
Always cheating.
The pressure was always there, but they could always
get cheating. We were using the rules to our benefit. Yeah.
Well, you want. The rules are, and always have been the same. You've got to stay in your line.
We were using the lack of technology to our benefit.
That's more like it.
Which position on the field, Craig, has the lowest football IQ? Strikers or keepers? Or is it another position?
Strikers are meatheads. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
Meatheads.
Well, our keeper. First of all, Dan.
Yes.
Before we answer that question, I think we have to define the question.
Okay.
Are keepers football players?
Oh goodness me! Ah.
Well, one was the player of the tournament, wasn't he?
Well, have that.
Ching 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 ching.
Lowest IQ.
Fair enough.
Xhaka, you're obviously an exception to the rule.
Strikers are meatheads.
Because he's a smart goalkeeper.
Strikers are meatheads.
There isn't such a thing as a smart goalkeeper.
You can use gloves.
Xhaka went to college. Xhaka,
you can use gloves.
At NASA.
Anybody that wants to be a goalkeeper is not smart. there's no coming back from that. If you want to be a goalkeeper, you're either a poor player or you're not smart.
All right.
I didn't give my son a lot of advice in football, but I told him one of the few things I've told him. When they ask if someone wants to go in goal, say no, always. Yeah. Because the kids want to go in goal. And Xhaka did, and look where he is now.
Just because Donnarumma's won the... Right, if Donnarumma... let me tell you. Striker wins the player of the tournament, bashing in all these goals. Everybody wants to be the striker. Everybody wants to be the playmaker.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to be Donnarumma.
I wouldn't mind being 6'5". I can't
buy
that.
Today you want to be Donnarumma.
I don't know if you could handle an extra 2 feet. 6'5".
I can throw away these heels.
You can throw away the cushions. But listen, there's two things. Nobody wants to be a goalie, so that's not smart. And nobody ever wants to be a referee.
No.
Like, how many kids do you think growing up want to be a referee?
I know.
No. They tried their best to be a player.
How referees get into this? How are we a different referee now?
I'm sort of coordinating the debate between goalkeeper, who wants to be a certain sports person in a certain position. And basically it boils down to everybody wanted to be an outfield player and failed.
Nobody wants to be a centre back.
So you're going to be a centre back. You either go and be a goalkeeper or you're going to be a
referee. There is no 7-year-old dreaming of tackling somebody.
Well, I'm not sure about that.
I'm sure there is.
I used to go to the back garden and...
There are more 7-year-olds thinking of making big saves than tackling somebody.
Yeah, that's fair.
Who will say to Christmas, I want...
That's fair.
I want gloves for Christmas. Well, that's a lot of kids want to have that. Yeah. But I'm not sure they want to be in goal.
Norway's cold, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a sort of de facto failure position.
Okay. This might be our final question. I feel like this has gone on forever. Who will win in the Chelsea versus Italy Champions of Europe title?
Sorry?
Chelsea versus Italy.
Italy.
Oh, what do you mean?
What do you mean they won't win that?
What do you mean?
Chelsea are a much better team.
Italy.
Why?
Because I just said so.
Well, there has to be some justification, sure.
Nope. No.
Italy. No. End of story. We're talking about Chelsea right now, not Chelsea with Haaland or anything of the sort.
No, Chelsea just won the Champions League.
Italy.
Really? Yeah, but it's
move
not,
on.
It's not a feasible.
Really? What are you looking at? What are you doing?
The result. It's not a feasible thing, so I can't.
You can, of course you can.
No, it's a club v country, it's never going to happen.
Yeah, well, I know it's not going to happen, but it's still interesting to discuss.
No, it's not.
Well, for some people it is. Well,
I'll try to answer that. If you take man for man, player for player, I think Chelsea will win it. But Italy showed during this championship that it's not about player to player, because Mancini managed to make a team out of it. So I will say that Italy will win it.
Wow.
I'm going to say...
No, you don't get to answer.
I'm going to say Italy.
Xhaka, how excited were you about Trinidad's draw against
I thought you said
Mexico?
That last question was the last question.
They wanted me to ask this for Xhaka. Do you think that this year the soccer warriors bring it home?
Oh, we're not going to win the tournament.
Those are soccer warriors.
That's Trinidad and
Tobago.
What's soccer warriors, not soccer.
What's
soccer
the Gold
warriors.
Cup?
Correct. Yes. To answer your question, Dan, I was very excited
about
the draw.
Were you in punter mode?
I was very much in punter mode. We've had a difficult couple of years.
Yes.
We needed that result.
Oh, good. That is
it should be called the Holiday Destination Cup.
No, it shouldn't.
Yes, it is.
The Gold Cup.
Two half-decent teams, and I'm stretching out of that, USA and Mexico. And
it's a wonderful tournament.
I'm really making friends again.
That we're proud to be in.
Good, okay, good.
It's one of the worst tournaments I think I've ever seen.
It's a fantastic tournament that I enjoy every minute of.
The Gold Cup is a pile of tosh, trust me.
It is a tournament
worthy of the name. If it were playing underneath this desk, I wouldn't watch it.
Gold
Cup.
Worthy of the name.
Do you know the thing is, they all take it serious. And all the Americans come out as well and go, oh, what are we going to do? You know, the usual suspects. Get a life.
That's exactly how I was.
How exciting is this for Greg Berhalter? And
never mind Greg Berhalter. Wait, about the Soca Warriors.
Wait till it's a proper competition.
Angus Eves Soca Warriors.
Wait till it's a proper competition like the Hex. The Hex. Spare me. What a bunch of Muppets.
We play another Have I made friends on Wednesday, again? Trinidad and Tobago, the Soca Warriors.
American
Be
friends.
Sure to tune it.
How many people watch the Euros?
Tune it, Craig.
How many people watching the Gold Cup? Oh, is the Gold Cup on? Oh, sorry, what's that? The Gold Cup, that's a horse race from Cheltenham.
I'll give you a call to remind you when Trinidad and Tobago play El Salvador on Wednesday.
El Salvador?
Yes.
Oh, yes, a biggie. That's the only Gold Cup. Cheltenham.
Craig, don't whip yourself, that's weird.
No, it might qualify for the Gold Cup.
And watch that.
You can send a team through, Jan. Y'all can't seem to qualify for anything else.
Let's go. Let's through. Get out of it. That's enough. ESPN.
Can Norway be a part of Gold Cup?
Come on. It'll be me and you
tomorrow.
Against Greg.
Bring Gold Cup preview with Craig.
Trying to big against El Salvador Wednesday.